A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Welcome to episode 519 of the Comics Horse Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the New Comics Wednesday episode for September 26th, 2018. So I've got about 5 books I'm going to talk about in a little more detail, and then I'll give a rundown on some of the other books I read and some of the other titles that I think you might want to keep an eye out for when you head to your comic shop today. So let's start off with the big one. I think a lot of people are anticipating Heroes in Crisis from the creative team of writer Tom King. We've got art by Clay Mann, colors by Tameu More, and letters by Clayton Cowles. I am going to cover this title much more in depth, probably not this Friday, because this Friday is Justice League 8, but next Friday's episode will be a spotlight on Heroes in Crisis 1, where I basically go page by page and break down what happens in the story and give my thoughts. There's a lot that happens in this issue in a way, or a lot to talk about, I should say. I don't know that you could say there's a lot of action in the issue, but it has the potential to be extremely controversial. I think the hook of the issue, it's a couple things. It's the talent of Tom King and what he's done recently on titles like Vision and Mr. Miracle that got a lot of press, or Mr. Miracle's currently getting a lot of press and coverage. Vision got a lot back in the day. He also did Omega Men and Sheriff of Babylon, which were critically acclaimed, but weren't quite as well known, I guess you'd say, flew a little bit below the radar. And so that's certainly a hook. Like, people want to see, well, what's Tom King going to do next? So that's part of it. The other part is the fact that he's really trying to tell a story that hasn't, at least at DC, hasn't really been told before. Like, PTSD, how do heroes deal with that? And this idea of sanctuary that was set up by Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. It's a really cool concept, and I think it's resonating with a lot of people, and it's kind of topical with what's going on in the world right now. So beyond that, it's a little hard to talk about what's going on in this book, just because it's to talk about any of the events would be quite spoilery, I'll put it that way. But obviously we know that the sanctuary is a place for heroes to go and get help. Their heroic deeds of the world they live in kind of becomes overwhelming. If you don't follow any comics press, you may not be aware of the rumors that are swirling around certain characters, who might live, who might die, who might survive. We've also heard that this story is a little bit of a murder mystery. So again, there's a lot going on here. And all that being said, there's not a whole lot that happens in this first issue, considering everything that we've been told. And I also wouldn't necessarily expect issue 2 to pick up where issue 1 leaves off, because we're kind of starting, in a way, we're starting in the middle of the story. I suppose you could say we're starting at the beginning of the mystery, but there's a lot more to be discovered about what Sanctuary is and how it worked. So I don't know. I'm not quite sure how I feel about this first issue. I'm probably going to have to read it a couple more times. So it's probably good that I'm not going in depth. Obviously, I don't want to get too spoilery. But what I am worried about is knee-jerk reaction from comic fans. I know, and a lot of you that are on social media will know, that comic fans aren't known for their patience or for their open-mindedness. And so the knee-jerk reaction is to overreact, really. And I really don't want to see a bunch of people spitting vitriol Tom King's way, because he's a really good guy and he's a really talented writer. And I think he got somewhat of a bad rap on Batman 50. I mean, honestly, I can't believe how many fans thought that Batman and Catwoman would actually get married. I mean, it's ludicrous, and it would be a big deal, and it could still happen, but there's no way it that wasn't going to go down the way that it did in 50, because it leaves so much fertile ground for story. And I still wouldn't really expect them to get married. Like, I wouldn't really believe it until I actually saw it in the pages of a comic. I mean, he being Tom King still has 50 issues to go, so it still could happen, but I wouldn't be holding my breath. But he did get a lot of kind of pushback on that from fans, and I didn't really necessarily think that was deserved. I mean, he's telling the best stories he can, but at the end of the day, he doesn't own these characters. They're not his characters to do what he will with. So everything's got to be passed through editorial, and a lot of times editorial will dictate to him, okay, yeah, this is your story to tell, but this is one of the things that needs to happen in this story. So there are some casualties in this issue, and I just worry about what the fan reaction is going to be. And I have mixed feelings about it myself. Maybe even I'd say mixed to negative. Maybe I'm leaning more towards not liking it than liking it. And I trust Tom King, and I'm a fan of Tom King. So I get it. Believe me, I get it. But I'm also been around the block, you know, just because something happens in one book doesn't mean that it can't be changed in another book. So jury's still out on this one. It is an impactful first issue, surprising first issue in some ways. So very curious to see where it goes from here. Where there can be no ambiguity in this issue is the art. The art from Clay Mann is absolutely spectacular. I know he's not the fastest artist in the world, but I don't care because his art is so detailed. So detailed. I mean, I remember when I first saw his art on Ninjak over at Valiant, and I was just blown away. And I honestly can't believe it's taken this long for him to really start blowing up. But I think this Heroes in Crisis 1, I expect it to sell really well. And I think for a lot of people, this is probably going to be the first time really seeing Clay's art. And they're going to fall in love with the art. I do hope that the shadow of what happens in the story doesn't fall across his art and people overlook it, because it deserves to be praised and it deserves to be admired, because it is unbelievable, from the facial expressions to the panel layouts, the flow of the story, the angles in the panels, the backgrounds, the detail. I mean, it is so, so good. I mean, just the artistic choices he makes, it's stunningly good. This art is just amazing. There's no other way to put it. So get out there, pick it up. Let me know what you think on social media. I'm very curious to see how this is all going to shake out. I'll be paying close attention tomorrow when people start talking about this. I say tomorrow as I record this. It's today as you're listening. But Wednesday when it comes out, I'm going to be very curious to see exactly what people's reaction is going to be. I kind of unfortunately have a feeling I know what some of the reactions are going to be. And again, it's kind of got to be willing to wait and see what happens. You can't prejudge. We have 7 issues to go, so I guess we'll see what happens. All right, next book I'm going to talk about is Justice League Dark. It's from writer James Tynan. We have Alvaro Martinez Bueno on pencils. We have Raul Fernandez on inks. We have Brad Anderson on colors, and Rob Lee handling the letters. I actually tweeted about this, I guess it was Monday night after I read it, because I was so blown away with this issue. And in fact, this is my book of the week. That's how good it is. I think I said something like James Tynan's really taken the story to the next level. Gorgeous art from Alvaro Martinez Bueno. The colors they perfectly suit the mood. The supernatural feel tend to be a little darker, a little muted, a lot of blues and purples. So, plus don't forget about Rob Lee, the letterer. We've got this new villain, the Upside Down Man, whose word balloons are not your standard word balloons. And his dialogue and the way he speaks is a little different. So kudos to the letterer as well. If you listen to this podcast for a long time, you'll know I always compare letters to baseball umpires. right? The good ones you don't notice and you don't comment on it, and it's not really a thing that they get praised for. But boy, when you have a bad one, you know, a bad baseball umpire can ruin a game, and a bad letter can ruin a comic. And you don't realize that until you have a bad letter. So it's not that the first two issues of Justice League Dark were bad. I thought they were well done, but the story really hadn't grabbed me yet. I particularly like the way James Tynan gives voice to Constantine. And I like the fact that Constantine's not really a member of this team. When I talked to James at Phoenix Comic Con, I think he said something about Constantine not really being a team player. So he doesn't really see him as a team player. He's the guy that shows up, drops a quick one-liner that literally just cuts you, you know, to your quick and brings you to tears, and then wanders off and maybe flicks a little spell to save the day if he feels like it. So that's the role he's playing here, and it suits Constantine perfectly. And so I love that James has that takedown and that character down so well. As far as what else happens in the story, I'm not going to spoil it. I was a little surprised. It kind of brings the first arc to a close, but the story is certainly not finished. We have a couple intriguing things that happen in this issue, especially with Wonder Woman, that have kind of opened a bigger mystery. And although we meet the Upside Down in this man, I think on the last page of issue 2, and then we get a really good idea of what makes him tick here in issue 3, we also know that although he's defeated in this battle, the war is far from over. In fact, it's just beginning. So there is an event coming in October called the Witching Hour, which is going to tie in with the Wonder Woman books, tie in with the Justice League Dark books, and then I think there are a couple one-shots as well. So I'm very curious to see what happens in those titles. I was kind of on the fence. I wasn't sure if I was going to read them or not. I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll flip through it and see if it grabs me. Man, I can't wait. I need those books like immediately. Because what James did in this issue was done so well, particularly with Wonder Woman and Constantine and really all the cast. Like Zatanna has some great moments as well, moments with her father that really helped us to kind of understand exactly the groundwork and the map that James Tynan is laying out for the supernatural corner of the DCU. And it makes a lot of sense. And it gives us also a very clear idea of the kind of danger that the DC universe is in right now. With what happened in Metal and on the heels of that, what happened in Justice League No Justice, man, the heroes really, and they didn't have a choice at this point, right? Like Earth had gone into the dark side of the multiverse, and they did what they had to do to pull it back out. But in breaking the source wall, they have introduced so much danger to the DC universe. And we've got to have all these different books that are showing us exactly how many dangers are out there, right? I think Scott Snyder, maybe it was Wonder, I think it was at WonderCon was the first time I heard him give this analogy. He's like, okay, think of the DC universe as a fishbowl. And now that the source well's been broken, basically somebody's taking the contents of that fishbowl, you know, the few fish that live in it and the water, and they've dumped it into the ocean. And that's what we're seeing happen. That's actually what's playing out. There's all these dangers now that have been introduced to that environment that was in that fishbowl, and they're coming at the residents of the multiverse and the DC universe that we know at so many different angles, so many different dangers. And so we see here that this is kind of the magical enemy or the, I think they're called the old gods or, can't remember the term right now, but it's definitely the supernatural threat that has been reawakened or become aware of what's been going on through the years because the source wall's broken and they're kind of awake now and aware of what's been going on and what these magic users have been doing in the DCU, and they're not necessarily happy about it. So good job from Tynan writing this issue. Upside Down Man felt creepy. That's the best word that I could use for him. He's a little scary. He's certainly not cute and cuddly, but the look and the way he talked, he definitely seemed formidable. And man, just super creepy. The visual on him is just so creepy. Like, just, oh, right? So, great job by Alvaro Bueno Martinez, or Alvaro Martinez Bueno, excuse me, on the rendering and the artwork in this issue. It's handled really, really well. He has a beautiful style. It really suits this type of book because his stuff looks pretty traditional superhero, but then he also can go creepy with his rendering of the Upside Down Man, but he also does things in background and when he's drawing like little symbols and glyphs and stuff like that, that shows that he can handle the more esoteric or kind of out there concepts that you sometimes see in superhero books. And his stuff's also very, I don't want to say soft, but there's a curve to it. It's not, his stuff's not really like angular, right? It's whatever the opposite of angular is, you know, like, which would be curvy, but I know that's not, I don't mean to say he's drawing the women like well endowed or the men look feminine or anything like that, but whatever the opposite of angular is, I'm sorry, I'm not an artist, he has that down flat. So maybe fluid would be the right word. His art flows very well. So again, incredible work from all the creative teams. The colors by Tomeo Morey, as I mentioned when I first started talking about the issue, a lot of blues, a lot of purples, so it really gives that supernatural feel. And the color work when Wonder Woman has her kind of big moment is spectacular. I can't praise Morey enough for the work there. So yeah, kind of a no-brainer as my book of the week. Sometimes one or other of the books will just pop out at you. And in no way did I think, okay, yeah, Justice League Dark's number 3 is the book I'm looking forward to, and that's going to be my book of the week. This one took me by surprise and in a really, really good way. Yeah, and there's a double page spread with Constantine that I'm looking at right now. That's amazing. So again, kudos to the entire creative team. You guys really knocked it out of the park on this one. All right, up next, another Justice League book. This one from writer Joshua Williamson. And we've got actually all the art is handled by Stepan Sedgwick. So he does pencils, ink, color. He's works digitally, and he's actually pretty quick. Now, I was looking forward to Justice League Odyssey maybe more than any of the other Justice League books when it first got announced, you know, because they got announced. Well, we got Justice League first, and then at WonderCon they said, okay, there's going to be Justice League Odyssey, and it's going to be Justice League in space, and then we're going to have Justice League Dark, which is obviously the supernatural corner of the DCU. This was the one that I was most excited about, even though it didn't necessarily have my favorite members. It has Cyborg, Starfire, Azrael, Green Lantern, the Jessica Cruz Green Lantern, and then Darkseid, of all people. And I thought, you know, it's not really, like, of those characters, Jessica Cruz probably my favorite, maybe Azrael. Never been a big Cyborg or Starfire fan, and how is Darkseid on a Justice League team? That doesn't necessarily make sense. But the fact that it was Stefan Sedgwick and Joshua Williamson had me super, super stoked. And then they pushed it back like 2 months, 3 months. And I was really bummed out and I, you know, worried about it. And at San Diego, Joshua Williamson was talking about how the story they told just kept, or wanted to tell, just kept getting bigger and bigger and they needed more time. Except that didn't necessarily jive with what I'd heard before, because I'd also heard that there was some miscommunication with Stepan and he had to draw a lot of he had the first two issues done and then had to redo them. So I don't know if the story changed and he didn't get the notes or if it just didn't look the way they wanted it to look. Just a little unclear on what exactly happened. Now, I will say after reading the issue, it doesn't feel out of place as far as timeline, and it also doesn't I mean, you've got to take all these books as far as like timeline and where they fit together with a grain of salt, right? Because Cyborg and Wonder Woman are showing up in the regular Justice League title, but Wonder Woman's off dealing with whatever she's dealing with in Justice League Dark, and Cyborg's out here in space in Justice League Odyssey. So it's not completely clear how they all fit together. Clearly, they all happen after the Source Wall has been broken. But this first issue is a lot of setup, and I'm not really sure what to think of the story yet. It's gorgeous to look at. Sedgwick's art, as always, is stunningly good. He has a real sense of conveying emotion, and also there's a real lushness to his art and his colors. So we get to see Jessica being pretty competent as a Green Lantern, which is great to see. I love that she's kind of come into her own since the start of Rebirth and the Green Lanterns title, where she was teamed up with Simon Boz. So that's great to see. I'm unclear on exactly where Starfire is, this Rebirth version of Starfire. You know, Starfire I know is from the classic George Perez and Marv Wolfman Teen Titans. And I know that this Starfire is not exactly that. I think when the new 52 started, she was a lot more naive. And she was in the Red Hood and the Outlaws book, which I didn't read. And then I know Jimmy and Amanda had a series with her for a little while. I think it was 6 or 8 issues. But I'm unclear kind of where she is. But she's drawn beautifully by Sedgwick, and that's great. But she does still seem a little inexperienced to me. So Cyborg is clearly the kind of the leader of the team and the most capable, it seems like, because Jessica's really kind of a younger hero, somewhat of an inexperienced hero as well. So I love that Cyborg has the confidence and has the ability to lead. In those classic Teen Titans runs that I was talking about, he was a bit of a hothead and sometimes let his anger get the best of him. But I think ever since the New 52 started and John's made him a founding member of the Justice League, I love the direction that every person who's worked on Cyborg has taken him. They're really playing up his importance, which makes a lot of sense based on how technology has become so ubiquitous in our everyday life. And he really is the tech guy, and really pushing it beyond that with his ties to the New Gods, with his mother box as his power source and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's great. That being said, again, I'm not the biggest Cyborg fan. So I'm looking forward to reading him here and seeing if I can feel like I can relate to him and kind of understand him a little better. And then Azrael, same thing. I mean, the Azrael I know is from the Azbats, you know, way back in the day, sort of Azrael from Denny O'Neill and I think it was Barry Kitson or Joe Quesada. I think maybe it was Joe Quesada and then Barry Kitson. So that's the Azrael I know. I'm not really that familiar with this religious version of John Paul. So looking forward to seeing him, and him in space too seems like an odd choice, which makes it seem like it could be really, really fun. So, and then we do see Darkseid join the team in this first issue as well. Although we don't get a lot of answers about his motivations, and you take everything Darkseid says with a grain of salt. So don't know, can't say where I'm at on this issue. I will say that, I was really excited for the first issue. I was really excited, more excited than either of the other titles. But I don't know if it was because of the delay or just because this issue is a lot of setup. But I feel like this is the weakest of the three titles, the Justice League titles, as far as first issues go. And again, it could just be because of the delay. Or it might just be because not that much happens in this issue. The team basically comes together, and it doesn't come together in an organic way, it does come together in kind of an organic way. They're kind of forced together by circumstances, rather than in Justice League Dark, where we saw Zatanna out recruiting. So if you're going to put the team together that way, that you need the space to tell that story, which is what this is. But I don't want to say I was underwhelmed, but maybe my expectations were just a little bit too high. And again, I didn't have a lot of expectations for the other two books, not the way I had expectations for this. And also, I just talked about Justice League Dark being amazing and being my book of the week, whereas I just thought the first two issues of that were just okay. So there's nothing to say that I can't get really excited for this series just based on issue two or issue three. So I'm definitely going to keep picking it up. I'm definitely loving the art from Stefan Sejic, the art, the colors, the layout. And Joshua Williamson's a great writer. You know, I read just about everything the guy puts out. So just not sure what his big idea is here yet. And maybe that's what I'm missing, to the point where after reading the first issue, I'm just not excited. I'm not like, oh man, I can't wait to like get the next issue, because again, I'm not sure what the point is yet. I'm not sure what this team is going to face. Whereas in the regular Justice League book, we know it's all about the totality and facing off with the Legion of Doom. And in Justice League Dark, we know it's the Upside Down Man and the forces that he represents. And there's some mystery with Wonder Woman, with this power that she exhibited in issue three. So I have a really good understanding of those two Justice League books, what they're about and where they're going. With Justice League Odyssey, even though we're one issue in, I still, you know, I've got the kind of the overall map, like they're supposed to be exploring a certain part of the galaxy and the universe. But is that really what they're going to be doing? And how does Darkseid really tie in? Those are questions I'm going to need to have answered first before I can get really excited about this book. So again, it's just one issue based on the art by Stefan Sejic. It's worth picking up that first issue just for the art alone. And in the hands of Joshua Williamson, I trust that this team's going to come together and we're going to see some really fun storytelling, because it is somewhat of an eclectic group, more so than any of the other Justice League titles. So I think there's a lot of rich ground to kind of plant seeds in for some really fun stuff down the line, with like, how is Azrael and Darkseid's relationship going to be? What's the relationship going to be like between Starfire and Jessica Cruz? Like, there's all these questions to be answered. So in that way, I am excited to see how the relationships play out. What the larger story is, we're still gonna wait and see. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is Shanghai Red number 4. We've got Joshua Hickson on art, colors, and cover. We've got Christopher Sabella on script and design. We've got Hassan Otsmane Elahu on letters. Roman Stevens is handling the color flatting. So if you've been following along, I've been talking about Shanghai Red since it came out, since issue one. It's an Image title, and as the name implies, it's about a character named Red who got shanghaied. And for those who aren't aware, Shanghai was a term where you had these ne'er-do-wells who would go around to bars and brothels, and they would find guys that were drunk or somewhat inebriated and drug them, or try to find guys that were passed out drunk. And they literally would take these guys and put them on ships in the harbor. They would sell them as like slave labor. And then these people would wake up the next day, not only with a hangover, but they'd be miles and miles out to sea. And if they wanted to eat and ever see their home port again, they were forced to work, and they were treated like dirt, like animals, you know, worse than slaves, lucky to be fed and worked to death. So not a good place to be. So this is the story of Red, who was shanghaied and eventually makes her way back to Portland, where she's from, and is out for revenge. So it's a very violent book. It's a very visceral book. It's certainly not for the faint of heart or for young readers. And in issue 4, we get a little more of Red on the night that she was kidnapped. And we also get a little more of her revenge scheme. So it's extremely well paced. The art from Joshua Hickson is really visceral. A lot of dark colors. The flashbacks are a little brighter, and it helps to differentiate. The other thing that's really interesting is the relationship that's being built between Red and her sister Molly, who stayed behind and believed her to be dead. So there's a lot to unpack here, but most of all, it's just a really noirish period piece that's got some great character and great action. And being that it is a creator-owned book over at Image, I feel like it's flying a little bit under the radar, and that's why I continue to talk about it each time a new issue comes out, because it's really, really good. And I'm hoping at the very least it does well in trade, because I think reading it all together in one sitting would make an incredible story. So I wasn't sure how long it was going to last. I'm not sure how long it's going to last. I thought issue 4 would wrap things up a little more than it did. So it must either be 5 issues, or perhaps it's going to be an ongoing, or at the very least issue 5 will probably be the last issue before the trade, because there's things have come to a head somewhat at the end of issue 4. And I expect issue 5 to be paced pretty quickly. There's got to be a lot going on. The other thing I'll say about Shanghai Red that's really cool, 32 pages. This issue is 32 pages. And when you're reading it, you really feel like you get a big chunk of story. You know, I was reading, I was like, wait, I'm glad it's still going, but it's still going. You know, when you read as many comics as I do, you kind of start to get a sense of the timing in your head. Like, okay, well, I've read about this many pages and it should be coming to a close pretty soon. But just about every issue of Shanghai Red has been, I think every issue has been close to 30 pages, at least 28. And you do feel like you get a big chunk of story. So I do recommend it. It's, again, not for the faint of heart. It's definitely for mature readers. But the dialogue, the look and feel of it feels accurate as far as 1880s Portland. Get a sense of that history, and mostly the characters and the pacing and the action are reasons to buy this book. All right, last title I'm going to talk about in detail is Faith Dreamside. It's from writer Jody Hauser. We've got art by MJ Kim, colors by the incomparable Jordy Belair, and letters by Dave Sharp. So I haven't read any of Faith's other Valiant stuff other than when she was in Harbinger or she's shown up in other books. I didn't read the Faith miniseries that came out, and I didn't read like the Faith Christmas special. So kind of jumping into this a little bit blind, but as Marvel does, Valiant does as well. They do little recaps inside the cover. And I know Faith is beloved at Valiant. She's very much a hopeful and a positive character, kind of a torch carrier or a flag bearer, if you will, for nerds everywhere, because she loves things like Firefly and comic books and all that kind of stuff. So I think where she's at right now is she was living her dream. You know, she finally was able to have superpowers and had a team together for a little while at Future Force, I think. And then she fought against a group of enemies that basically framed her, made it look like she had killed somebody. And so when this issue starts off, she's kind of been in hiding. She hasn't been herself. And we see over the course of the first issue that she decides that keeping a low profile, she just can't do it anymore. You know, she doesn't want to fight the police. She doesn't want to put herself in danger. She does want to clear her name. But at the end of the day, what's most important to her is using her powers to help people. And when push comes to shove, she'll risk her own freedom. Because again, she is wanted for murder. She'll risk her own freedom to save the lives of others. So that's kind of where she is right now. I'm curious to see if this series she'll have a chance to clear her name. But the other cool thing about the series is we get to see Dr. Mirage, because this is going to be a trip to the dream side. It is going to be Faith interacting with the supernatural corner of the Valiant universe. Not exactly sure what the dream side is just yet, but Anomalia shows up and needs help, and it has everything to do with the dream side and with ghosts, and there's nobody better to tackle that kind of thing or to ask for help from. If you are in need of confronting ghosts, confronting the supernatural, than Dr. Mirage, right? Like that should be the go-to. I love Dr. Mirage as a character. It's one of those times where the original Dr. Mirage was a male character. And this is one of those times where the new iteration is better than the first. I just think Dr. Mirage as a female just works so much better for different reasons that I'll probably get into someday on Valiant Sunday. But she's just so empathetic and so capable and such a great character. So I love that this book's going to be kind of female focused as far as main characters, with Anomalia and Faith and Dr. Mirage. And I can't wait to see where it goes from here. Again, I'm not the biggest Faith fan, but I'm more in it to learn about the dream side. And Jody Houser is a great writer. So it's not that I dislike Faith. It's just, again, she's not somebody that I can relate to in a lot of ways. Obviously, I can relate to the love of comic books and, you know, a lot of things that are geeky and nerdy. But some of the other stuff, it doesn't really speak to me, which is fine. You know, I have no problem with that. I do think she's a good character. I'm glad she exists. She does represent something that a lot of female comic readers don't get to see in comics normally. You know, somebody who's, as far as their weight goes, a little on the heavy side. So again, I have no problem with any of that. It's just, I don't find her to be that interesting. That might change when I read this, story, we'll see. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing more Dr. Mirage and learning about the dream side. And I am curious enough about Faith, and can she clear her name? It's kind of cool in a way, because again, Faith is such a fan of comics, and she knows all the tropes and all the stories through the years. And in a way, you would almost think she'd be kind of tickled by the idea that she's been framed and has to clear her name, right? It's a story that everybody from Batman to Daredevil to Spider-Man has had to, Superman as well, has had to do at one point or another. They've all been framed by one villain or another and had to convince people that they were innocent. So facing that same boat, it's curious to see how she comes out the other side. All right, so let me go ahead and talk about a few of the other titles that are coming out today that you might want to be on the lookout for. Beyonders 2 from Aftershock hit stands. I did talk about it real briefly on Aftershock Monday this last week, and I think the story really is about to take off with issue 3. Issue 2 answered a lot of questions, was some setup, but at the same time really moved the story along, and we got to see Jacob doing his thing, cracking codes and mysteries and such. So it's really set up to take off from here. Over at Boom, I want to mention Bone Parish number 3 from writer Cullen Bunn. I have the first two issues. I bought the first two issues. I haven't had a chance to read them, but I've been hearing really, really good things. So I definitely need to dive into that. And kind of the elevator pitch on that one is somebody's learned how to create a drug made out of the bones of dead people. And I guess, I don't know if you snort it or smoke it or whatever, but you basically get a high, and you also get to like see their memories, I think is the way it works. So really intriguing concept, but you know, be careful, you know, what you wish for and side effects and all that kind of thing. And there's not too many people who write horror better than Cullen Bunn. So I'm definitely looking forward to checking that out, and I'll let you guys know my thoughts when I do get a chance. Over at Dark Horse, we have Stranger Things number 1. That's also written by Jody Houser. I haven't seen any of the Stranger Things Netflix shows. I know that I think it's had 2 seasons come out so far, and it's wildly popular and set in the 80s. You would think I'd be all over it based on all the 80s nostalgia and everything. And, you know, that's my decade. It's when I was a kid. It's when I grew up. I probably identify with the 80s more than any other decade. All that being said, I tend to be a little contrarian when things get super popular. It makes me not want to watch it. Just because I feel obligated, you know, it's like, man, am I obligated because everybody's watching it? I don't know. Game of Thrones is that way for me a little bit, but also I just have no interest in it. I do have a little bit of interest in Stranger Things because of the subject matter more than I do Game of Thrones. But the other part of it, and I've talked about this on the podcast 1,000 times, who's got time to watch TV? I got comics to read, man. But anyway, I may check out Stranger Things number one in comic form. And who knows, maybe it'll lead me back to the TV show. All right, over at DC, we've got Action Comics 1003. We'll be talking about that on this upcoming week's Superman Sunday episode. And I have a feeling that Adam from Talking Superman and I may have our biggest disparity in reaction to a Superman issue from Bendis so far. I'll say that one of us liked it and one of us really did not. So you'll have to tune into that episode to hear exactly our reasons behind that. And I'm curious myself. We only spoke about it really, really briefly. So look for that coming up on Sunday. Also, we've got Detective Comics number 989. This is continuing the James Robinson story arc. And we do find out in 989 who the big bad is, if you weren't able to figure it out from 988, which I did not figure it out, but I read it more than once and I didn't try too hard. But then when you find out who it is, it really makes total sense. So great Steven Segovia art. And for me, I'm still picking up Detective because it's got amazing Mark Brooks variant covers. So it was an interesting issue. I'm kind of ready. I didn't think it was as strong as last issue, Robinson's debut on this arc. But I feel like with what we see happen at the end of 989, it should really take off from here. Also from DC, Doomsday Clock, number 7 of 12, from Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. I'm woefully behind on Doomsday Clock. I keep saying that I'm going to catch up, and yet I haven't. I think I've only read the first two issues, which is just criminal. Part of it was, it lost momentum when it went to bi-monthly. So I feel like knowing it's bi-monthly and it's, you know, we've got another like 10 months or so, 8 months before the last issue comes out. It's like, I got plenty of time to catch up. It's going to be interesting too, to see how that plays out with what we see some of the events are in Heroes in Crisis. I mean, even with events, Heroes in Crisis, issue one, makes me wonder what's going on with Doomsday Clock and the whole Rebirth story and everything. So it's all yet to be seen. Also, Flash 55 from Joshua Williamson is out today. It's continuing Flash's look at the other forces. You know, we've seen him deal with the Still Force in Justice League. We've seen him deal with the Strength Force in the pages of Flash. And I think what I'm remembering from Flash 55, we may see the Sage Force as the next kind of area where Barry explores. I already talked about Heroes in Crisis, both the Justice League titles. We've also got Scarlet number 2 of 5 from the Jinx World imprint, Brian Michael Bendis. I wasn't really impressed with the first issue of Scarlet. And the caveat there being I haven't read any of the previous stuff to really set up and understand exactly what's going on. I was kind of dropped in the deep end of the pool. That being said, issue 2, I thought was great. I probably would have given issue 1 like a C-, just because it didn't, even though I didn't understand, you can kind of pick up from context, but it just didn't seem to be a very interesting issue to me. That has completely changed with issue 2. I give it a B+. And I'll definitely be checking out issue 3. So great job from Bendis. And I think is it David Mack that does the art on that? Or is it Alex Malev? I think it's one of the two. You know, Bendis always works with one or the other of them. Yeah, it's Alex Malev. So if you're a fan of Scarlet, I'm assuming you're going to love this issue. We've also got Titans 26 and Wonder Woman 55 out from DC tomorrow. Over at Image, Cyberforce number 6 from Top Cow, which we finally find out exactly who the bad guys are, which is pretty interesting. We've got also from Top Cow, Port of Earth Volume 2 from writer Zach Kaplan. And The Wicked and the Divine gets a one-shot. set in the year 1373. I haven't read any of The Wicked and the Divine, but I've heard that it's really good, and especially the one-shots where you get to see gods in different time periods. Those seem to be favorites of readers of The Wicked and the Divine, so be sure you don't miss out on that. And also from Top Cow, Witchblade number 8, continuing the story of the new bearer of the Witchblade. Over at Marvel, we've got Domino Annual number 1. Edge of Spider-Geddon concludes with number 4, and that's going to lead into the Spider-Geddon proper event. Extermination 3 from Ed Brisson with art by Pepe Larraz comes out tomorrow. Really looking forward to that. The first two issues of that series were amazing. We've also got another of the Infinity Warp books. It's number 1 of 2. Infinity Wars Iron Hammer. So if you've been reading Infinity Wars, you'll know that Gamora has all the gems and she folded the universe in half. And in doing so, she basically mashed together some characters. So if you can't figure it out from the name Iron Hammer, yeah, it's Thor and Iron Man who are mashed together in that title. Punisher number 2, also out from Marvel tomorrow, written by Matthew Rosenberg. Spider-Geddon number 0 starts that event, as I mentioned previously. And the last thing I'll mention is over at Valiant. In addition to Faith Dreamside, we've got Harbinger Wars 2 Aftermath number 1, which we'll be talking about on this week's Valiant Sunday, along with the final issue of Harbinger Wars 2 number 4. So if you're a Valiant fan, you're definitely going to want to tune in for that. I think there's going to be some strong opinions, and they may not necessarily be popular ones. So that does it for this episode and the books that you should be on the lookout for as you head to comic shops today. If there's anything I missed or that I should be reading that's coming out on the stands, definitely let me know. I'm always up for recommendations. So thank you for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure to check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The next convention I will be at is New York Comic Con, coming up the 4th through the 7th in New York, New York. So if you're going to be there, let me know. Always love to run into listeners and chat about comics, grab a selfie, and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. So look forward to that. Once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.